Hello and welcome to the Security Talk series. My name is Graham Callidine from the Security Centre of Excellence Group within Microsoft. In this module, we're going to cover the security best practices to follow when developing with Windows Azure platform. In this module, we'll cover the security challenges and recommended approaches to design and develop more secure applications for the Microsoft Windows Azure platform. We've broken it down into these following five sections: the challenges involved in designing applications in the cloud, and a discussion on the differences between the on-premise and cloud-based security architectures; recommended practices for handling identity management and access control in the Azure platform, including some simple design patterns; guidelines for choosing the appropriate .NET trust level for your web and worker roles; sample design patterns and recommendation practices for implementing access control in Windows Azure; and best practices for deploying Azure applications, including certificate management, namespaces, and port filtering. When it comes to cloud-based solutions, it is very important for software designers and developers to anticipate threats at design time. This section highlights some of the specific threats that developers are responsible for to mitigate in the cloud, and describe the protections that Windows Azure provides against an array of service, platform, and infrastructure layered threats. Developing an application for a cloud platform such as Windows Azure opposes several challenges when compared to traditional on-premise applications, which will have a significant impact in the design of the application from a security perspective. There are significant security architecture differences between traditional on-premise software and the cloud application. Many of the security controls that help protect applications from security threats in the box world do not apply to the cloud, and developers will need to incorporate other controls to mitigate those threats. In this module, we will see how some of the traditional controls map to the cloud. Another important consideration is the term cloud can apply to very different application environments, just like there are many different on-premise application environments with different characteristics. Many of the security controls available are provider-specific, and developers should familiarize themselves with the security model and characteristics specific to the cloud platform they are designing. Many organizations are required to have applications compliant with a set of legal and regulatory requirements, covering aspects from privacy to encryption and security management. These regulations will typically apply not only to part of the stack that is under the control of the organization, but to aspects under control of the service provider. When selecting a cloud provider for an application, the organization has to make sure the platform stack can demonstrate compliance with these required regulations. From an implementation perspective, cloud platforms can use very different mechanisms to perform tasks like access control, patching, and other operations, due to the fact that the organization is under the control only of part of the stack. Many of the tasks that applications took for granted in the on-premise world would now need to be performed at the application level, and there is not the same level of trust and customization available in the platform as a service platform, such as Azure. This visual module represents a fairly typical on-premise application architecture, and then pins hotspots against it. Applying security controls at the network, host, and application has been the traditional approach to secure a typical enterprise application. In many cases, mitigations to protect applications against security threats were implemented at the network or host, which in this scenario are under complete control of the organization. Using this visual model of the cloud, we can use the same approach to evaluate cloud applications. We modify the visual model by hosting both the application and the data layers in the managed infrastructure, which in this case is in the cloud. The key point here is that with a managed infrastructure, we can remove certain checks from our list because they are items handled by the managed infrastructure. For example, a Windows Azure application will not have permissions to create user accounts or to elevate privileges. This alleviates the need to manage accounts at the host level. There are also no considerations in securing the network, as this is also handled by the service provider. Architects and developers should focus on the security measures at the application level, which become even more important in this kind of environment. From a security perspective, the fundamental difference since we're moving from a platform as a service like Azure is that a large part of the stack is now under control of the service provider. This slide shows what parts of the stack remain under the developer control and should be addressed during the application design. At the data center layer, the developer can specify how many instances Azure will deploy for a role in the application. This gives a developer a degree of control in the infrastructure available to cope with high levels of demand. At the platform layer, Azure provides developers with the choice of which level of trust the .NET code should run with, using the .NET Code Access Security feature. The Azure platform also provides interfaces for implementing claims-based authentication and authorization, a platform for collecting and persisting audit logging, and mechanisms to secure access to stored data. At the application layer, the developer has full control of the security architecture of their application and is responsible for the development of the code that follows the security best practices that mitigate traditional web security threats like SQL injection and cross-site scripting. Applications should use the threat mitigations provided by the Azure platform, which may be in some ways different to the ones available to traditional platforms. Just as we have shown with the visual model of the cloud, it is important to make sure you understand what security dependencies you are on the hook for. Here we map the traditional dependencies to the cloud equivalents. Input validation is still critical in the cloud. Cross-site scripting and cross-site request forgery attacks are still prevalent. Thus, you must scrutinize and sanitize all custom input, whether it has come in from an external service or a user. The SDR recommends fuzzing the inputs to see how well your code deals with various formats of data. The SDR actually suggests around 100,000 fuzzes per interface. Use the Microsoft anti-cross-site scripting library for other similar libraries to help against cross-site scripting issues. And you can also mitigate against cross-site scripting request forgery attacks by setting a hidden session token in the client requests and setting the page view state user key to the current session user ID. Namespace scoping issues are also important in Azure. For example, it is recommended that you do not use the cloudapp.net domain. If, for example, you scoped the document domain by accident to the cloudapp.net domain, then every single Azure customer could script against your application. The same applies for cookies. You must be very careful that you are scoped to the right subdomain. Application level DOS attacks, which is denial of service attacks, are still your responsibility as well. You may have a process for dealing with video submissions, etc. You still need to throttle the input so your application is not overwhelmed if your application is dealing with time-sensitive operations. Authentication, authorization, and audit issues. How do these map to the cloud? In the on-premise world, a user contacts a DC and gets his credentials, and then he can use those to access a resource. In Azure, this does not exist. So you have claims. You can use the AppFabric ACS to map claims provided by the client so that claims from your application will be understood. It will perform simple claims transformations for you, and there are plenty of examples of how to do this on the Azure portal. But the point here is to make sure you map all the traditional dependencies that you normally do to the cloud and make sure you have them all covered and you have no gaps. For audit, you no longer have the event tracing and system logs and object tracking, etc. In Azure, you have the monitoring and diagnostic service that you interact with via a worker role, and you send log events to the monitoring and diagnostic service via a trace listener that you have in your code. This will then log these events via a scheduled transfer to your storage account every 5 minutes or so. And you will still need to protect this data and make sure the transport is protected by SSL. Storage access control lists map to shared access signatures. As described in the previous module, by default, all of your storage is private, and if you want to allow restricted public access, you need to create shared access signatures that identify ACLs, lifetimes, and privileges that you are granted. Certificate services, again, you do not want to store the certs in Azure storage. You can use the Azure service from the portal to actually store certs securely. Point being, these traditional defenses that you're used to on-premise all need to be mapped to the equivalent in the cloud. You can use claims for identity management and access control. Claims align well with the cloud applications because they allow you to factor out the identity management logic from your application and integrate with identity providers such as an on-premise Active Directory via Active Directory Federation services. Design principles help you leverage proven practices. Rather than have a rule for everything, you have a smaller set of principles to guide you. Patterns are simply problem and solution pairs in context. They help share strategies and principles by building a shared vocabulary. In this section, we shall see some of the patterns used for control and access to ASP.NET websites and the recommendations for performing identity and access management in the Windows Azure application. This scenario represents the most basic implementation of authentication in an ASP.NET website by using the ASP.NET table-based membership provider, the roles provider system, and the Windows Azure storage. It is primarily used by applications who have an existing solution based on the ASP.NET membership system, whose authorization needs do not extend beyond simple user names, groups, and roles, and the metering expenditures are based on the total storage size utilized and not the number of transactions. In this pattern, the user provides its credentials, such as username and password, over SSL to a web form, and the application uses the table storage membership provider to authenticate the user to an Azure table. Access to the Azure storage is controlled through the storage access keys that the application possesses. Authorization is done in the application logic using ASP.NET table storage role provider. This scenario has some benefits. There is a lower cost per megabyte storage ratio when compared to SQL Azure. However, there are several points to be considered before choosing this approach. There is a cost per transaction basis that may grow only if there are extremely large numbers of transactions. Windows Azure Storage provides only one index per table, which limits the querying capability into the user store. At the time of writing, the provider is a sample and has not been rigorously tested like established providers such as SQL Membership Provider. Membership will pass credentials over the wire when authenticating, and thus you must use SSL. And if you update your authentication code, you will need to redeploy the application. This scenario for a forms-based authentication with SQL Azure is similar to the previous one, but it uses the ASP.NET SQL Membership Provider and the SQL Role Provider to implement authentication and store user data in SQL Azure. It is primarily used by applications who have an existing solution based on ASP.NET membership and based on SQL Server, which can then be easily migrated to the Azure platform. In this pattern, the user provides its credentials, such as a username and password, over SSL to a web form, and the application uses the SQL membership provider to authenticate the user on SQL Azure. Access to the SQL database is done through a SQL connection string in the web config file that has the SQL username and password. Authorization is done in the application logic using the SQL Role Provider APIs. Now, this scenario has the following benefits. Existing guidance is widely available. A large amount of product documentation and samples exist for SQL providers. SQL providers ship with a .NET framework and have been extensively tested. User data stored in SQL Azure can be relational, which makes it more flexible for use in other functions beyond authentication. And there is no cost per transaction. However, membership will pass credentials over the wire when authenticating, thus you need to use SSL. Building a new user store will cause additional work for administrators when adding users to the system, and this can be a bigger problem in a large corporate environment due to the number of large systems that are being managed. SQL Azure has a database size limit, which may force partitioning of user data across multiple databases. And if you update your authentication code, you will need to redeploy the application. This scenario demonstrates using Active Directory User Store with a Windows Azure hosted ASP.NET application utilizing claims. This solution is based on a WS Star stack and uses Windows Identity Foundation and ADFS v2. This pattern can be used in situations where you want to leverage an existing user store hosted in Active Directory, and you want to have a single sign-on with the Azure application, and it's okay to expose your store using HTTPS. In this pattern, when the user connects to the Azure application, its browser is redirected to ADFS v2, which is the identity provider. This redirect, by the way, is known as a passive federation since it's from a browser. ADFS authenticates the user and provides claims as a SAML token. The browser is then redirected back to the Azure application and delivers the token to the application, which it uses to authenticate and authorize the user using the Windows Identity Foundation. To validate the token, a trust relationship needs to be established between WIF and ADFS, which typically involves providing the ADFS certificate to the application. Now, this scenario has some major benefits. You can leverage an existing Active Directory user store through Active Directory Federation services. Thus, you do not have to implement the store yourself and maintain the code for that store. This is an implementation of single sign-on. It uses security tokens instead of credentials, which is more secure because the credentials are not passed over the network. Building around claims allows you to separate the authentication logic from the application logic, freeing you from writing all of that code. The solution supports clients both on-premise and on the internet. There are some points to consider though before choosing this approach. The corporate user store needs to be exposed to the public internet via ADFS, and management of trust relationships between the application and the secure token services such as ADFS is a manual process, so corporate IT policies may require establishing trust relationships, which would have to be done manually. This scenario extends the claim scenario by federating identity with a partner. The partner identity store is coordinated with the upcoming AppFabric Access Control Service 2.0, also running on the Windows Azure platform. So corporate users obtain authentication tokens from the federation partner and then have access to different applications on Azure. You can use this pattern in situations where you want to externalize claim-based federation and authorization, which will use credentials from multiple user stores and from multiple providers. This pattern is very similar to the previous one, but uses AppFabric ACS 2.0 to establish the trust relationships between the identity providers and the applications hosted on Windows Azure. Users provide their claims to ACS 2.0, which then provides the claims to the WIF-based applications. Now, this scenario has the following benefits. You can leverage an existing Active Directory user store through ADFS v2, as well as other stores compatible with the WSStar stack or the SAML 2.0 protocols. This is an implementation of single sign-on. It is also an implementation of federated identity. It uses security tokens instead of credentials, which are more secure because they're not transmitted over the network. Building around claims allows you to separate the authentication logic from the application logic, and the solution supports clients both on-premise and on-premise. The only caveats are, once again, your user store is potentially exposed to the public internet if you're using ADFS v2. Management of trust relationships between ACS 2.0 and secure token services such as on-premise ADFS is a manual process. Therefore, you'll need corporate IT policies to make sure establishing the trust relationships is kept up to date. The following recommendation should be used by Azure developers when designing their identity and access strategy. Use claim-based authentication to integrate with existing user stores. Established approaches to authentication and authorization are still valid in the cloud, but claims and single sign-on approaches provide strong integration with Active Directory-based authentication and federated identity. Factor authentication logic from the application. Implementing authentication and authorization logic based on claims allows you to decouple your application from your identity logic. This provides for a far more secure application by standardizing around a common implementation of authentication logic. No longer does a developer need to have to be a security expert. Technologies such as the Windows Identity Foundation deal with all of the technical detail for you, allowing the developer to take advantage of claims-based identity models in their applications using a generic programming model. Now we should look at the VM model and trusts. The Windows Azure security model is centered around strict control over VMs imposed by two Windows Azure specific trust policies, which are defined as full and partial trust. These policies limit access to system resources to prohibit common attacks like elevation of privilege. A working knowledge of what the levels of permissions are available is required to know which pieces of an existing application can be migrated, and which must be adjusted to work under more restrictive permissions. Equally, it enables you as a new developer, not migrating application, to write your applications with the least trust possible. Permissions available to a role deployed to Windows Azure depend on the trust level for which the role is published. The two levels of trust available are partial and full trust. By default, roles deployed run under full trust. If you are developing a role that includes calls to native code, you must run that role under full trust. This full trust environment offers access to native libraries and resources that are restricted under partial trust. Thus, you can access the local server registry. You can write to HKEY current user. You can call native code libraries. You have read access to the Windows directory, read access to machine config files, and read access to service config files, but you have full access to the local storage resource. Additionally, you must run a role under full trust in order to access the Windows Azure diagnostics via the Windows Azure Managed Library. As we will see shortly, when roles must run with a full trust, we can implement a gatekeeper design to limit what those roles can do. The Windows Azure Partial Trust policy is similar to the standard medium trust policy for ASP.NET, but with far more restrictive controls. Here are some of the restrictions imposed under the Windows Azure Partial Trust Code Access Security model. There are no calls to native code, no access to native libraries and resources, no access to Windows Azure diagnostics via the Windows Azure Managed Library. There is read file system access to the application directory and the named local stores, and write and append access only to named local stores. No registry access at all. Access only to the temp and TMP environment variables, which is very different to the ASP.NET Code Access Security Medium Trust policy. And there is also no access to the event log either. Full trust of native code execution facilitates the following scenarios: use of FastCGI or PHP or Ruby, etc., migration of traditional web services to the cloud, role invocation and spawning of Windows subprocesses, calls into native libraries via pinvoke. A role that does not require the above functionality should have Windows Azure Partial Trust enabled, and do not use full trust if you can avoid it. This option only minimizes the attack footprint of the role in question, but it helps reduce the damage caused by a compromised role if such a thing happened. And regardless of the trust model selected, customer roles are hosted in non-admin service processes. These service host processes run under virtual service account SIDs and not as local system or network service. So therefore, you just do not have any administrative rights as you would on a typical server. Some of the things to think about in Windows Azure regarding data include deciding where to host your data, what will be used to host the data, and what means of access to that data will there be. By understanding the Windows Azure runtime trust models and the security protections and responsibilities of each cloud layer, developers can build hardened applications using the design best practices outlined in the next couple of slides. There are two recommended patterns for implementing access to data stored in Azure storage: the gatekeeper pattern and the multiple key pattern. Let's have a look at the gatekeeper pattern to start with. A more sophisticated access model can be built with the storage account. In scenarios where a partial trust gatekeeper cannot be placed in front of a full trust role, when designing web role interactions of Windows Azure storage, shared access signatures can be a powerful tool. Shared access signatures are effectively access tokens that bestow a set of rights against a blob or a blob container that would normally not be public. Since web applications are responsible for generating these tokens, they are also responsible for securely distributing them. In the event that one of these tokens is compromised, developers can either update the blob container metadata to invalidate the token, or simply create a new container for the blob data. However, this is still a reactive measure, and after damage could have already been done, so some guidelines for minimizing risk while using shared access signatures are as follows. Generate the shared access signature with the most restrictive set of ACLs possible. Use the shortest lifetime possible, and note the default is an hour. Use HTTPS in the request URL so the token cannot be snooped on the wire. To avoid injection attacks, do not base any container names, blobs names, etc., or table names on data gathered from the user. Windows Azure Diagnostics enables you to collect diagnostic data from a service running in Windows Azure. You can use diagnostic data for tasks like debugging and troubleshooting, measuring performance, monitoring resource usage, traffic analysis and capacity planning, and auditing. Once collected, diagnostic data can be transferred to a Windows Azure storage account for persistence. Transfers can either be scheduled or on demand. A dedicated storage account can be used as a central repository for multiple applications, even if the customer is using multiple subscriptions and storage accounts. It is recommended that the storage account used for auditing is in the same data center as the application to reduce the bandwidth costs. And to have auditing login stored on-premise, it is required to write an application that copies the data from Windows Azure to an on-premise data store. Note, there is no native functionality to provide this. Deploying Windows Azure applications can potentially mean deploying across multiple data centers that are physically separate. This will influence application design patterns, deployment, as well as communication between application pieces. Azure customers need to be aware of their application boundaries and the use of resources within the same data center where possible, and communications options such as internal endpoints when applicable. In this section, we'll go through the application deployment process in Azure and some of the security considerations that should be taken during application deployment, such as certificate deployment, port filtering, and namespace configuration. All service configuration is handled through two files, the service definition file and the service configuration file. The service definition file, or .csdef, defines the logical model for your service, including the roles compromising the service and any configuration settings, local storage resources, and certificates associated with the service. The service configuration file, or .cscfg, specifies the physical details of the service deployment, including the number of instances of each role to run, the values for the configuration settings defined by the model, and the thumbprint of the certificates associated with the service. Developers can use the cspack.exe to package your service to be deployed in the Windows Azure Fabric. The cspack.exe utility generates a service package file that is essentially a zip archive that contains the application files as well as the service definition files. It can then be uploaded to Windows Azure via the Windows Azure Management Portal. And by default, the package is named yourservicename.cspkg. The service configuration file is also uploaded with a physical architecture through the Windows Azure Management Portal. Windows Azure provides a secure certificate store which enables automatic deployment of service-specific certs to your role instances. Each Windows Azure subscription has an associated cert store to which you can upload certificates. The certificate store is independent of any hosted service or package, so you can store certs whether or not they are currently being used by any of your services. Certs can be managed separately from your services and may be managed by different individuals. For example, a developer may upload a service package that refers to a certificate that an IT manager has previously uploaded to Windows Azure. An IT manager can manage and review that certificate without stopping the service or uploading a new service package file. This is possible because the logical name for the certificate is in the store name and the location are specified in the service definition file, while the certificate thumbprint is specified in the service configuration file. To update the certificate, it is only necessary to upload a new certificate and change the thumbprint value in the service config file. These two slides that describe the workflow on how to add a certificate to the Windows Azure certificate store and then associating it to a service. In this scenario, the IT manager and the service developer are presumed to be two different people, but they may also be the same person. An IT manager exports the certificate to a PFX file, and this may be done using the Windows Cert Manager snap-in. The Cert Manager utility exports the certificate to a PFX with the private key. The IT manager uploads the PFX to the Windows Azure platform either via the Windows Azure portal or by using the Windows Azure Service Management API. The uploaded certificate can then be used by a service or simply stored in the subscription certificate store. If the certificate is part of a chain of certificates, the best practice is to recommend uploading all the certs in the chain to Windows Azure, and this can be done by setting the Cert Manage utility to include all the certificates in the chain. The second part of the task is performed by the service developer. The service developer associates the cert with a specific role within the service definition file. The cert entry in the service definition file provides a name for the cert that can be used to associate it with the cert thumbprint that's given in the service configuration file. In the case where the cert will be used for SSL, the cert name can also be associated with a HTTPS endpoint, and the name can be any value the service developer chooses. The service developer adds the entry for the cert to the service configuration file using the same name that was provided in the service definition file. This entry also specifies the cert thumbprint and the thumbprint algorithm. Windows Azure uses the thumbprint to identify the cert within the subscription cert store and deploy the cert to the VMs that will run the role instances. The IT manager provides the cert thumbprint and thumbprint algorithm to the service developer, and the thumbprint identifies the certificate. But it is not sensitive information. The thumbprint algorithm specifies the algorithm used to generate the thumbprint only. Moving on to port filtering. The only ports open and addressable, internally or externally, for incoming traffic on the Windows Azure VM are endpoints explicitly defined in the service definition file. Windows Firewall is enabled on each VM in addition to enhanced VM switch packet filtering, which blocks unauthorized traffic. The Azure service definition file defines both the external and internal endpoints. An external endpoint can receive incoming traffic from the internet. A web role may be or may have no more than one HTTP endpoint and one HTTPS endpoint. A worker role may have any number of HTTP, HTTPS or TCP endpoints. An internal endpoint is available only to other role instances running within the service. It is not available to clients outside the service. A web role may have a single HTTP internal endpoint, and a worker role may have any number of HTTP or TCP internal endpoints. Namespace configuration. Here are a few more configuration issues to be aware of when selecting the namespace that will be used by clients when connecting to the Windows Azure platform application. Avoid using the cloudapp.net domain name. Use a custom domain name instead. An important distinction between the enterprise and the cloud is that the cloudapp.net namespace is shared amongst all Azure customers, while the namespace Microsoft.com is wholly owned and controlled by Microsoft. This means that the cloudapp.net namespace is inherently less trusted than the domain namespace of a single enterprise, because one customer of Windows Azure does not automatically trust all the other customers in that domain namespace. So don't create code that requires users to place cloudapp.net in the trusted sites list in their web browser. Equally, if you make a mistake with cloudapp.net, all customers could potentially script against your site. Never scope cookies in the document.domain to cloudapp.net. Instead, scope to the service subdomain. Any attempt to broaden the document domain access can leave the service open to scripting attacks from the entire cloudapp.net domain namespace. IIS 7 does set the document.domain to full subdomain by default. But scoping is so often changed by web developers that it warrants a mention. For most content, only interactions with the content from the same domain name are allowed. For example, a typical page on Microsoft.com can freely script content on any other page on Microsoft.com, but it cannot script to pages that are located on a different web domain. The dynamic HTML object model uses the document domain property to enforce this restriction, and only pages with identical domain properties are allowed free interaction. The protocol of the URL must also match. For example, a HTTP page cannot access a HTTPS page. And finally, here are some considerations when deploying applications to the Azure platform. Windows Azure meters data transfers for billing. Metering is performed on traffic entering and leaving the data center, but is not measured inside the data center. Systems comprising of parts that must communicate between VMs should be deployed to the same data center to optimize expenditure. Affinity groups is an Azure feature that tells Windows Azure to deploy applications in similar areas within the data center. Doing this will minimize the number of network hops within the data center and improve network performance for your application. Separation of responsibility should be considered for any Windows Azure deployment. This means you should have a clear policy defined for roles of administrator, release manager, developer, tester, and other appropriate roles. The Windows Azure portal is accessible via two methods: a user interface that requires a live ID to access, and a deployment API that requires a deployment certificate. Multiple deployment certificates can be added to the Windows Azure account. These certificates can be added to Visual Studio and allow multiple distinct parties to deploy from Visual Studio to Azure. Because Windows Azure portal access is controlled via a live ID and deployment certificates, policies should be established to include proper management and distribution of both the live ID and the deployment certificates. Developers should not be in charge of deployment nor management of the Windows Azure service. And test environments should be deployed separately from production and staging environments. This brings us to the end of Module 4. We have touched upon design challenges, claims, trust models, storage, and deployment. For more detailed information, visit the Azure portal, the Azure blog on Microsoft, and visit the detailed MSDN library.
Check out the Windows Azure subscription options at http://bit.ly/try Windows Azure to find one that works for your business needs.